T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The story just will not die in college football. It got another breath of oxygen, and it continues on. Tell you about it here in just a second. Don't forget your chance to win $1,000 free cash money. The keyword for the 6 o'clock hour is magnet. Text the keyword magnet to 72881. Again, magnet to 72881. Your chance to be entered and win $1,000 in our free cash dash contest. Guys, you cannot win it if you don't get in it. And I'm telling you, here is your chance. The word magnet to 72881. Also, don't forget, I mentioned it last week, but the Palmetto Curling Club on Saturday will have a Learn to Curl at 5:45 to 7:45 at the Pavilion. You can register online if it's not full already. John Schuster and Matt Hamilton, Olympic gold medalists from the U.S. men's curling team, they will be there with the Palmetto Curling Club at the Pavilion from 5:45 to 7:45. And then at the Lazy Goat in downtown Greenville at 8:30 till 10:30. Saturday night, you want to go have a pint and toast to their gold medal. So good luck to those guys in town playing in the BMW Charity Pro-Am. I don't know if there's going to be actually any ball hit through that tournament this weekend, Dees, because the weather is supposed to be so nasty. I thought it honestly would have poured rain starting yesterday from what we were looking at on the radar. But the BMW Charity Pro-Am will get underway tomorrow. All right, as I mentioned, the story, Diesel, that will not die gets another dose of, not gasoline tossed on it, but more oxygen that keeps it going. And here it is, Nick Saban. His comments regarding Central Florida, their, you know, bling and parade and everything, celebrating their mythical national championship. And his, Nick Saban's quote yesterday regarding UCF when asked about it and their mythical title, he said, quote, "If you honor and respect the system that we have, despite some of the imperfections that you understand that the system has, then you wouldn't do something out of respect for the system. But self-proclaimed is not the same is actually earning it," Diesel, end quote. I actually fully agree with Nick Saban on this, okay? But there have been schools, programs that have self-proclaimed titles. This is nothing new. I understand that the BCS was set up to try and, you know, set up the national champion. The College Football Playoff, same vein, trying to determine the one national champion. But here's the point on it. While I agree with Saban, if UCF wants to go and do this, go do it. Who cares? Go do it. Because my point here, it's May, and we are still talking about Central Florida in a 13-0 season that ended in January.
You know what, Central Florida? Listen to me right now. You don't need anyone else's endorsement. You don't need anyone else's blessing. You don't need any of those things. You go do you. Go out there and needle the system, please. And we all know, yes, we all know that Central Florida did not win the national championship. We all know that, but I still love the fact that they're out there needling the system anyway. They're just doubling down on being jerks about it. They're being petulant, and I love it.
Would it have been jerky or would it have been needling to take your parade from Walt Disney and go through Tuscaloosa? You have satellite camps that aren't in anywhere in your backyard. Sure. Why not a parade on another school's campus? I mean, I wouldn't have liked it. Now, that was when, if I'm an Alabama fan, I know that we won the championship. They did not. I don't know what some get their, you know what's in a wad about and upset about. I think it's ridiculous. You know that you were the best team in the country, and that UCF, even though they went 13-0, wasn't. why bother wasting the time and air and blood pressure points worrying about UCF and a mythical? Yeah, exactly.
Who cares?
Now, if you ran their victory parade up through my campus, I'd probably have some issues with that.
Sure.
But, you know, the point is, Danny White in Central Florida in this whole thing, they've won. They mission accomplished in their whole point they were trying to prove. If you're going to exclude us, fine. We will celebrate and do it our own way. And when you go 13-0 and you do everything you were supposed to in the regular season, you know, to put yourself in that kind of position as a, you know, group of five team, and you can't get a shot at it, what else do you do? I mean, I think the only we've gone down this road so many times on this show. It's about the haves and the have-nots. And the group of five teams are just never going to get a fair shot at this thing until you expand this thing to at least eight teams. They're not.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Any national championship that systematically excludes half of your member institutions is an illegitimate national championship. So I will say this, and I hope Mark Sturgis is listening.
Oh, boy. We didn't. No, hold on. We're not doing this to try and – this. We're not going down this path.
I know.
But go ahead.
My point is Alabama did not win the national championship last year.
What?
Because it's an illegitimate national championship.
All right, now stop. They are the national champions. They are the national champions. I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to get him to come through that phone, and I expect that phone line to light up. And if you want to get in and light it up, 844-477-3776. Again, 844-GSP-ESPN. I don't see Mark Sturgis lighting our phone line up, which – I know you were hoping he was listening. And, bro, if you are listening, give us a call.
We're not going to talk about 2016 because I don't want my Jeep to get keyed.
He's got I think he's on official radio silence until he returns.
Right.
Well, his sabbatical.
My point was I'm not even going to go there on the 2016 national championship because I don't want to get keyed in the parking lot.
Don't.
But 2015, Alabama, illegitimate as well.
I'm so glad he's not here. All right, today...
He'd be coming across the board to shut my microphone off.
Well, he probably would have walked out mid-segment. Look, you guys just do the show the rest of... You know, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. Today, speaking of Alabama, the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Texas Longhorns will play a home-and-home starting in 2022. Alabama will go to Austin in the first game of the two-game series, and then Texas will return the favor coming to Tuscaloosa in 2023. So good to see you got to think Tom Herman's team is going to be revved up by that point. I mean, Tom Herman is not going to let this thing linger, I don't think, very long. They're going to be much better this year, especially if they could – Malik Jefferson, if he had had a half a brain, he should have come back to school and played one more year at Texas. All right, something else – in college football, to hit on real quick, Michigan Athletic Director Ward Manuel says he wants Jim Harbaugh to retire at Michigan. Now, in fairness, in a meeting of the Big Ten Athletic Directors, the conference meetings, Ward Manuel said that he wanted Harbaugh and Beilein to both retire as coaches at Michigan because he's happy with the job they're doing. So, I mean, you always want to say something to that vein that we hope our coaches are happy and they retire here. I see a phone lighting up. Is it? Could it be? But as it relates to Michigan, he wants Jim Harbaugh to retire at Michigan. Jim Harbaugh is going into his fourth season as the head coach of the Wolverines. Harbaugh's 28-11. His total compensation is a $7 million. I think that's third highest still, which is more than Urban Meyer. A team that Harbaugh has not beat yet is 0-3. Michigan 1-5 against their rivals under Harbaugh, 1-2 against Michigan State, 0-3 against Ohio State. Many assume, as I do, that Harbaugh ultimately, at 54 years old, he's going to go back to the NFL. But let's just say, for the sake of it, he doesn't want to go back to the National Football League, Diesel. Does he have free reign, regardless of what happens, win-loss against rivals, winning Big Ten championships, making the playoff, do you think that Jim Harbaugh has a lifetime contract if he wants to coach there forever, regardless of results? See, I do. I think Harbaugh has – I think he has got – if as long as he wants to coach there, which I ultimately don't think will be for another probably 5 years, you know, you can say, well, look, we're paying him $7 million. He's third highest coach. If he doesn't make a college football playoff in the next 5 years, he's out. Look, you can stand on that argument. I totally get it. I just think as a Michigan man, I think that depending on what happens in the next 5 years, I think he's got as much time as he wants. But I do think there's no question he goes back to the NFL. All right, let's go to the phones. James is calling in, wants to talk Central Florida. James, what you got?
Hey, James. Hey, how y'all doing?
Good, buddy. What's happening?
All right, so with the UCF self-proclaiming themselves as the national champions, I actually don't have an issue with it. Mm-hmm. I actually enjoy the fact that they're going against a system that actually all but basically prohibits them from ever competing from it. And so for people who say, like, well, they're not the actual national championship,
yep,
it's not like they actually have a chance to prove it, because it's not like any other Power Fives are ever going to schedule them, because a loss, like Ohio State losing to UCF looks bad for Ohio State, but a win for UCF would be that good for them. So they're kind of forced in the situation that they're in. So I kind of enjoy the fact that they're going out there calling themselves like national champions. Put spotlights on the on other teams and for the committee to be like, hey, look at us. But they're going to, if the system basically puts them into a hole to where they have to play their own competition and they don't have a way to move up, but they can only go down, then I don't see an issue with it. I actually like it.
Which is Diesel's argument as well, James. Appreciate you getting in. Thanks so much for the call. I mean, it's exactly what you're saying right there.
Spot on. And he's right. You know, they're now, I mean, most of probably the next 3 or 4 years of UCF's out-of-conference schedule is probably already set without actually going and look at their schedule. But most teams have their out-of-conference set for the next 3 or 4 years. And that has been set now for at least 2 years going back. The question is, will anybody be willing to schedule them what will be 2023, 2024, 2025 right now? Because that's what they're scheduling for right now. They're scheduling for 8 years in advance right now.
Well, you have to shave off, and I haven't looked at Alabama and Texas's schedule, those two teams, for instance, but are they shaving off a Texas State to play a Texas, like in Alabama's case? Are you shaving off two cupcakes to just play one a season? Because fans are sick of paying the exorbitant ticket prices that it costs to be, you know, with your seat donation and all that crap that universities are milking out of you to go watch a couple football games, one against the 1AA, or excuse me, the FCS.
Right.
I like that the power teams do that, because especially when they keep it in state, like
right,
when Clemson plays a Citadel or South Carolina plays a Wofford. I like that.
Florida State, Miami, the pressure should be on them to schedule a UCF. Pressure should be on Georgia Tech, South Carolina, the bordering states, where it would make a whole lot of sense. I actually did go pull their future schedules that are currently announced next year. UCF plays South Carolina State at North Carolina, Florida Atlantic, and Pittsburgh. So not really an opportunity in the regular season to step up and play somebody big and really get someone's attention. After that, I see they play at Stanford in 2019. They have Stanford coming to UCF in 2019, and they play at Pittsburgh in 2019. On the schedule in the future, in 2020, they got UNC and Georgia Tech. In 2021, they got Louisville. 2022, they got Louisville. 2023, they're going to Texas.
I think this is smart on behalf of the Power Five teams to shave off a cupcake and to add more quality games.
I think you need
to do it, especially in the age of the playoff.
I certainly get shaving off the FCS game. You know, and you know, South Carolina, the state of South Carolina is in a unique position where mm-hmm. the Clemson and South Carolina are both behooved but not required to play an in-state FCS to help them make their budgets. Now, we've discussed it on the show several times.
Yep.
How can you actually get them that money without having to play them? You can either set that as the spring game scrimmage. You can set up some sort of a trust that would pay those teams regardless. So there is a way to get them off the schedule and still pay them. Because, I mean, let's face it, with the money that Clemson and South Carolina are making from their respective media rights deals, they can pay off South Carolina State and Furman and Wofford and Citadel 10 times over on a season. The money is not the issue. I mean, it's the small schools that want to play the big schools because maybe they can pull that upset.
Yeah.
But not all states have that requirement. So it's not really, you know, you can't say that across the board because the University of Texas mm-hmm. is not required to play Texas State every third year.
Yep. All right. Good stuff. Good discussion. We got to get out of here. We got Jordan Rodrigue, the Panthers beat writer for the Charlotte Observer, coming up next. The sale of the Panthers is essentially done. What's happening on the field with some of the rookies in the newest Panthers? We'll talk to Jordan Rodrigue about it next. All right, here we go. The Carolina Panthers are not quite 100% under officially new ownership, but soon to be after the owners approve it at the upcoming meetings next week. But we're going to go up to Charlotte right now, talk with our good friend Jordan Rodrigue, one of the beat writers from the talented Charlotte Observer beat writing team that covers the Panthers. You can follow Jordan on Twitter at Jordan Rodrigue. And Jordan, welcome back into Straight Up with Surge. It is so good to have you back on.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, let's get into it. Obviously, big news. Look, it's going to make big news anytime that an NFL or any major pro franchise is sold to the tune of $2.275 billion. To new owner David Tepper. The thing that caught me by that just floored me, David Tepper paying $2.275 billion in cash for the Carolina Panthers. That is utter ridiculous, Jordan.
Yeah, that to me seemed like a massive power move by David Tepper and his team to pay cash up front to the tune of $2.2 billion, which I tried to quantify in my brain, and it's hard to do. I can't quite collaborate what that might look like, but I charted it out, and it's like if you stack dollar bills from Charlotte to Asheville, by the time you hit the Biltmore, you would still see money ahead of you. That's how much money that is.
Unbelievable. What is just, you know, you're around this team, this organization, you know, got sources inside, you know, what is the chatter around David Tepper taking over? I you know, a lot of questions about, you know, the coaching staff, the front office. One of the big things I thought immediately is the chatter regarding Tina Becker, who runs the day-to-day operations that Jerry Richardson turned over to her, what her status is going to be moving forward, because I cannot see much more of a future.
Yeah, you know, a lot of things are up in the air, including the status of a lot of people in internal operations with the Carolina Panthers. David Tepper, obviously being the prominent businessman that he is, has a team of people. We don't really know what's going to happen. I can see a lot of continuity in terms of football operations. I don't see Ron Rivera, Marty Herney going anywhere, at least through their contracts in 2020. I don't see the scouting staff or you know, a lot of the public-facing members of the organization, I don't really see much movement happening there. But with new ownership, you know, a guy comes in and will want people who are loyal to him mm-hmm. and who are his people and who know how he operates to be in the building. So I definitely think while we might not see a ton of public movement, I think there will be some movement come July when the deal is officially official, as you said. And I think that, you know, I also haven't heard a word from Tina Becker about any of this. I mean, you know, after requesting mm-hmm. about a dozen times comment, you know, the chief operating officer of the team doesn't have a comment. Something to keep in mind also, the team does not currently have a team president. I saw this great idea today by Daniel Jeremiah that mm-hmm. they should write a blank check to Ozzie Newsome to see if he'd be interested in the gig. I think that'd be a solid idea. But that's another position of power to keep in mind within the organization, Tepper bringing in a person that he feels comfortable with and definitely works well with.
That's interesting. Price Atkinson continuing with Jordan Rodrigue, one of the Panthers beat writers for the Charlotte Observer. Again, follow her on Twitter, at Jordan Rodrigue, does, along with Joe Person, Scott Fowler, their entire team, as good as anybody, any NFL beat team you will find. And you hit on something that I'm curious about. We can only speculate on what David Tepper will be like as an owner, but I got to think that he's going to be more vocal, more visible, more transparent, because Tina Becker, as you mentioned, you guys, numerous interview requests, you've got nothing but stonewalled every time. We've heard not a peep out of her except a few paper statements with things going on internally. Jerry Richardson wasn't exactly the most visible owner himself. Will we get a David Tepper that might be more like a Bob Kraft, a Jerry Jones, in terms of selling his team and his product to the community and around the country?
I can imagine we might get a combination of that and also the way the Rooneys in Pittsburgh handle their business. I think that it's something that will be really valuable to David Tepper once he does, you know, set foot in Charlotte and kind of put boots on the ground here. Now, you know, he has to build the trust of the community. He has to make certain assurances in the community in terms of charitable efforts, in terms of reaching out and continuing to build the community that has grown so much over the last two decades. That is clearly something that's very important to him, in terms of him putting his money where his mouth is. And his mouth where his money is. Once he gets to Charlotte, his mouth will be where his money is. So I think that it will be something that, you know, my understanding of David Tepper, the person, is that action and making sure that he is vocal in the community and also more public facing is something that will be important to him moving forward. What that will look like remains to be seen. I do know that from watching some of his interviews, he's been very vocal in certain business enterprises, in his charity work, and in his political views as well, on different television programs. I think we're going to be dealing with someone who is very, very well-spoken and very blunt at the same time. So that it might be an interesting combination, and I do think we'll see him a lot in the community.
All right, Jordan, DJ Moore at the recent rookie mini camp. I know you were there watching the guys, and your reaction and what you saw out of DJ Moore. I mean, that's not those mini camps are not as much of what you do on the field, but really what you retain in the film room and in meetings with the coaching staff. What was your just initial getting to see DJ Moore on that practice field for the first time, I believe, where he worked out at all three wide receiver positions?
Yeah, absolutely, he did. And I think, so that's a great point, first and foremost. Now, the Panthers set about building probably the most complimentary receivers room that they've had in several years, mm-hmm. and one that I think is somewhat modeled after what the Philadelphia Eagles did last year in terms of position flexibility among the group, mm-hmm. but also guys that complement the skill sets of one another, not necessarily having, you know, four star players out there on the field, but guys who can pick up where the other one leaves off, kind of fitting that puzzle piece together, and nobody really is the odd guy out. And that's something that's really important in terms of cohesion. In North Turner's system, it's going to be really important for efficiency and offensive production. So having a guy like DJ Moore, who's like that master key to any of those positions, he can fit in anywhere. He can perform well. His job at rookie camp was basically to show up in shape and to display that he knew his playbook. Having a full route tree in terms of every position, every receiver position on the field is not something that's easy oftentimes for a rookie to pick up. But DJ Moore was in the spots he was supposed to be in. He looks smooth. He moves smooth. I'm really excited to see him go against some of these defensive backs that Carolina has on the roster.
All right, continue with Jordan Rodrigue, Carolina Panthers beat writer for the Charlotte Observer. Again, at Jordan Rodrigue on Twitter. One guy I'm curious about that you wrote about, and I know that you're really high on, and that's rookie tight end Ian Thomas. And, you know, you wrote about his story of perseverance. Talk about just this incredible story and things he's overcome to get where he's gotten. And also, I mean, despite being a fourth round pick, this is a guy and a rookie at tight end. He can really help the Panthers from day one.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I'll go on the record. You guys can shoot me off to freezing cold takes or whatever you want to call it in 10 years. But I think we're still going to be hearing about Ian Thomas 10 years from now in some of the higher status players in the league. And that's how much I think this kid has potential to really be a dominant player in the National Football League. So Ian Thomas will be their tight end too. They want him to start day one. He's a great blocker, super physical. They want him to kind of be a new and improved Ed Dixon and maybe the heir to Greg Olsen. And he has the potential to do both. But what really to me makes Ian Thomas special is kind of where he came from. Now, his parents died within a year of each other when he was 8 years old, and he was one of eight brothers and sisters. One of his older brothers got custody rights and then shared custody with one of his older sisters. They both dropped out of school in Baltimore to make sure that they could work pretty much around the clock to raise Ian and two of his brothers and sisters, who they also gained custody of. And he found a lot of success in local outreach programs and sports youth programs in Baltimore, a lot like what we see guys like Thomas Davis and Cam Newton trying to build here in terms of a system for some kids who might need a little extra focus or attention to kind of succeed in. And Ian Thomas found a lot of success in those programs. He went to Nassau County as a basketball player. He wasn't recruited out of high school. He went to Nassau County in New York, community college, because mm-hmm. as a basketball player, and the football coach happened to see one of his practices and was like, why the heck isn't this kid on the football field? And he played, you know, very, very little football until he transferred to Indiana. Made sure to get his degree. He took summer school and did not join Indiana's football team, obviously without that transfer credit, until he could finish his degree. He said to me at rookie camp, as we were walking off the field, getting his degree was one of the proudest moments of his life, even above, getting drafted by the NFL, because his brother and sister weren't able to finish school because they were raising him. So to be able to show them that degree and then show them, you know, that he's a fourth round draft pick and a guy that this team really will depend on was just such a moving story to me. And I think Panthers fans are really going to root for this kid.
Yeah, whether you're a Panther fan or whether you're not, it's almost impossible not to pull for a guy like Ian Thomas. And you just had a great piece on him. Looking forward to seeing how he develops. Jordan, look, it's a pleasure to get you back on. You're one of our favorites. You're one of my favorites. Thanks so much for some time here on Straight Up with Sturge and talking some Panther football. Cannot wait to do it again sooner than later.
You guys are my favorites, too. Thank you very much. Really appreciate the time.
Awesome, Jordan. That's Jordan Rodrigue, Panthers beat writer for the Charlotte Observer. All right, don't forget the 6 o'clock free cash stash keyword is magnet. Text magnet to 72881. We'll be right back here on Straight Up with Sturge. All right, welcome back in Straight Up with Sturge. Appreciate Jordan Rodrigue, Jordan, joining us, talking some Panthers football there in that last segment. I'm telling you, she knows her stuff. She knows the game. Love, love having Jordan on. Really, really appreciate that time, especially all our guests this afternoon, as we got two more segments taking you up till 7 o'clock. Don't forget the $1,000 free cash dash keyword this hour, magnet, text magnet to 72881. And Diesel just got I just got a release here literally in the last 30 to 60 seconds, and I did not know this was coming, but former SEC commissioner Mike Slive has passed away at the age of 77. The release goes on to say, survived by his wife of 49 years, Liz, a memorial service will be held on Friday at 11:30 a.m. in Birmingham. I, of course, not privy to everything Mike Slive going, but the former commissioner of the SEC, the seventh all-time commissioner of the league, one of the most respected and accomplished leaders in SEC history, but also in all of intercollegiate athletics. And I would dare say this, that Mike Slive was the greatest commissioner that the SEC has ever seen. I would put Mike Slive as up there with the Dave Gavitts of the world, as one of the best league commissioners of any league at any time in history.
Well, he took him from a good league to an elite league.
Yeah, he sure did.
The SEC is far and away above every other league with the way it's operated.
Yep. So our thoughts and prayers out to the folks around the SEC, but especially in the SEC office and Mike Slive's family. Just a kind of a gut punch that we got here. Just had obviously no idea any of that was coming. Also, want to get into this real quick because we've got David Tepper taking over as the Panthers' new owner. And I think there's a couple things, questions, issues, things he should do immediately upon taking ownership of the Carolina Panthers. Number one, I think David Tepper should stand in front of a podium and let be said out of his mouth that he does not plan to move the Carolina Panthers out of Charlotte. I think standing behind the podium and in front of cameras and saying, I have no plans to move this team, this franchise out of Charlotte, I don't expect that to happen in terms of the Panthers to move, but I think that would allay some fears that are out there that come with any kind of new ownership group taking over, especially when it comes to a smaller market team that would be easier to move, unlike, say, a Dallas Cowboys, a Seattle Seahawks, a franchise of that magnitude. I think you need to have a more open and transparent ownership of the Panthers. Jerry Richardson has really remained behind glass doors, very silent. Of course, Tina Becker, who's taken over the day-to-day operations, is basically MIA from any kind of the public eye. I think Charlotte and the Panthers need a vivacious owner, unlike the silence of the past, somebody to be a public advocate like a Robert Kraft, like a Jerry Jones. You don't have to be over the top, but somebody that will advocate for their city and for the Panthers organization within the National Football League. I think they need an owner like that. Also, I think that David Tepper needs to address the situation in the future, a Bank of America Stadium. I don't think that – look – go ahead right now, whether you want the Panthers to be a Super Bowl host at some point down the line. The Carolina Panthers will never host a Super Bowl as long as it would be at Bank of America Stadium. I don't care how you renovate it, it would never happen. The only way the Panthers would get to host a Super Bowl in Charlotte would be to build a new stadium. I don't know if it would necessarily be downtown where Bank of America is, but I think something needs to be done in terms of addressing what David Tepper plans to do with Bank of America Stadium or potentially with a new Panther Stadium. I think one other thing that he should do, I think he needs to connect with the fans immediately. I think he needs to specifically connect with the PSL holders. There's about 23,000 PSL holders, and I think guaranteeing ticket prices won't rise, that they will remain the same for a period of time. Throw and catch barbecue on the field of Bank of America Stadium. I think doing something to swoon and build relationships with the season ticket holders is critical. And a personal thing of mine that I would love to see David Tepper do that is more cosmetic than anything, and if you're a Panther fan and watch Panther games on Sunday, you know what I'm talking about. I desperately want the Panthers and David Tepper to get rid of at midfield at Charlotte Bank of America Stadium. What the Panthers use at the 50-yard line is the NFL shield. I want it gone. It looks stale. Put the Panther logo in there. Put something that screams your organization instead of a NFL shield that goes from the 35-yard line or the 40-yard line to the other 40. That was a Jerry Richardson thing. That was his loyalty to the NFL. But it just, you need something that screams Panthers, not the NFL.
Yeah, I like that idea.
I've long wondered why they've never done it. I think you have a stale look.
Put the shield on the 25s like every other team.
Put a small one right at the 25 and go catty corner on each end. You can find a home for that. But you should not. You don't need to have the NFL stinking logo that big. You need to have your logo. I want to take pride in the Panthers, not the NFL, at midfield. So those are some things. Can you imagine? So he pays $2.275 million in cash, Diesel. Can you imagine? And Jerry Richardson, just as a footnote.
Is that million or billion?
Billion.
Billion, okay.
Jerry Richardson bought the team's expansion rights in 1993 for $206 million. I mean, he's cashing in $2.275 billion. Can you imagine what the price tag for Tepper would have been if it had taken another week or two to get this deal done after sports betting was legalized? It could have been $2.5 billion. It could have been close to $3 billion, seriously, because the sports betting is obviously going to increase value of franchises. We know that. That's no secret. Speaking of franchises, in the NBA tonight, you have Game 2 in the Western Conference Finals between the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets. The Warriors lead the series 1-0. Look, I had the Warriors picked in 5. They win tonight. it's probably going to a sweep if Golden State wins. Houston has to say Houston has to win tonight is the understatement of the year. I'm still comfortable in my pick of Warriors in five. I think Houston will find a way to get a game, but I'm sorry, you can't beat the Warriors simply playing ISO ball and pick and roll. I mean, that style of play with one player in James Harden will not beat the Golden State Warriors. And D'Antoni's comment about, well, he might need to score 55 or 60 in the next game. Other players have got to step up for the Houston Rockets. Harden had 41. Paul had 23. Your other starters, I mean, you basically had nobody else step up. You've got to have somebody else. James Harden cannot – look, if James Harden scores 70 points, that may not be enough if he's doing it by himself. He's got to have help. All right, let's go ahead and get out of here. When we come back, we've got some audio of the 911 call.
Oh, yeah.
Lucas Glover, the situation that went down in Jupiter, Florida, or down in Florida during the Players' Championship. We're going to play some of that audio, the 911 call, when we come back here on Straight Up with Sturge. Price Atkinson, Diesel, rocking along till 7 o'clock. All right, here we go. Final segment. Let's go back to the phones. Yates wants to talk about the Panthers. Yates, what you got?
Hey, all those things you said about the Panthers was identical to what the Charlotte Observer guy said the other day. I think for the people up here in the upstate, the thing we want to know most is, are they going to keep the training camp in Wofford?
Yep. Another great question. I think that's another valid question is, and that's the Jerry Richardson tie. Will they stay here? It's a pressing question, but not one of those immediate. And I definitely put it ahead of getting the NFL shield out in the middle of the field. Yeah. That's certainly, that's more pressing and important than that. That was more just a personal one. I agree with you. A lot of people are going to bring up coaching changes and front office changes. Yates, those things just are not going to happen. You'll see more like behind the scenes front office folks, that change, because you want to have people that you trust around you. You're not going to see radical, moves in terms of roster personnel. You're not going to see like Marty Herney shown the door immediately, those kind of things. So appreciate Yates getting in with us. Sorry, as we told you before the break, the situation around Lucas Glover broke the other day that Lucas Glover, the pro golfer from here in the upstate, his wife Krista was arrested on Saturday after a 911 call was made from where they were staying in Florida. And the St. John Sheriff's Office in Florida fielded the call, and it was Krista Glover that initially dialed 911 and claimed that her mother-in-law had attacked her. And then it was quickly rectified as the St. John Sheriff's Office called back to the home that Lucas Glover then answered the phone call and basically said that, I think we've got our lines crossed here. This is her husband. My wife called you, but she's trying to blame it on my mother, which is not the case. My wife has gone crazy. The St. John Sheriff's Office then asked to speak to the wife again, Lucas Glover saying, no need to come out here. Everything's fine. We've got it under control. Misunderstanding. The wife gets back on the phone, and ultimately the sheriff's office does show up. She is arrested as she was arrested for misdemeanor charges on domestic violence, battery, and resisting arrest without violence. But she was intoxicated when they arrived, said she had been drinking all day. As Lucas Glover did confirm on Twitter, there was an altercation and said, quote, regrettably, although Krista was charged, we are comfortable that the judicial system is able to address what actually happened and Krista will be cleared in this private matter. According to the arrest report, there were visible bruises and lacerations on her husband and mother-in-law. So Krista makes the 911 call. Here's what we will bring it to you right now.
911, what is your emergency?
I've been attacked by my mother-in-law.
Okay, what's your address?
Thank you.
What's the street name? Okay, you said you were attacked by your mother?
Yes, and my mother-in-law.
Is she still there?
Yes, she's in here. She's locked herself into the room, and she's attacked us.
Okay, how did she attack you?
I don't know.
did she attack you?
You know, the thing that I noticed out of that first initial call is that she started out very controlled.
Yep.
The first, you know, my mother-in-law attacked me. Very controlled. And then when she started telling the story, it's when you could audibly hear the agitation growing in her voice, which to me says she's putting on a performance.
So here's when the sheriff's office calls back. Lucas Glover then answers the phone and talks with the sheriff's county's 911.
I think we're going to the right place.
All right.
Hold on a second, Logan, okay?
Oh, she's going to tell us to hold on, too. Yes, here it is.
Hello?
Hi, this is St. John's County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I think we got our lines crossed here. This is the most insane one of the bunch.
Okay, can you tell me what's going on there?
Yeah, my wife, who called you, my mom, and now she's trying to blame it on my mother, which is not the case at all. My mother's the one bleeding, and my wife has gone crazy, so.
Okay, does she need fire rescue to come out there and look at her?
No, I don't think anybody needs to come out here. Thank you, Bill.
Okay, well, we still have deputies that are coming out there just to make sure that everything is okay there. Can I talk to your wife real quick?
No, you cannot. She is in the house with my daughter, and when the deputies get here, they need to talk to the male. That would be me, because these other two are out of their head at the moment.
Okay, sir, but she dialed 911, so I need to speak with her so I can find out what's happening from her side.
Well, she's going to lie to you. That's what I'm telling you. That's why I answered her phone. She's telling lies, and none of it's true. But I'll let you talk to her, but it's lies.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
All right, so here's where we will hear the very end of it when his wife, Krista, gets back on the phone. Here it is.
This is the person I was talking to originally?
Yeah, we're not having a great day tonight, unfortunately.
Okay, we do have deputies on their way out there. Can I get your name?
Do we need help or not?
We've got deputies coming out there already, okay?
Okay, thank you.
What is your name?
Yeah, we're going to go.
Can I get your name, ma'am?
So that was the 911 call in St. John's County between Lucas Glover, that Krista Glover, his wife, initiated, claiming it was the mother-in-law that started the incident and attacked them, when in reality it was the opposite, Diesel. Just a sad situation all around.
It is, and I do understand. Granted, I can't put myself in that position.
Yeah.
Because neither can you, because neither one of us had that level of fame.
Yep.
And that level of money that you, mm-hmm. you know, it lends itself to public embarrassment.
Yep.
And legal troubles that could end up costing you a lot of money. So mm-hmm. I understand why anyone in that situation is going to say, no, don't worry about it. We're okay. We don't need you to come out here. But they have to anyway.
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, protocol being followed there. And, you know, certainly all we can say is just hope everything gets resolved in the best manner for the family, especially for the kids, having a 5 and a 2-year-old. So, just sad, sad stuff. All right, let's just go ahead and get out of here, Deez, as we, you know, great show this afternoon. Jody Dimling from CardinalAuthority.com joined us in the first hour. Really appreciate Bob Ryan and Brad Brownell in the middle hour, and then Jordan Rodrigue from the Charlotte Observer there earlier here in the 6 o'clock hour. Just, you know, another great lineup. Mark Childress will be back. He'll be in the saddle the rest of the week. I will see everybody again at some point next week, but certainly our thoughts and prayers out to our man Martin B. Sturgis, healing up, getting better. Can't wait for him to hurry, and get back, Diesel. Great job as always today. Again, we'll be back tomorrow where you can enter and win our free cash stash contest to win $1,000 free cash money. All you got to do is listen and text the keyword. We'll see you tomorrow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.